Welcome to the Dogs and Deadlifts, Building Better Dogs podcast. If you like a podcast that is raw, unfiltered, and authentic, you have come to the right place. Our goal is to bring clarity around canine fitness and conditioning. We help people ignite their dog's performance and build better dogs. Join your host, Daniel Rose, as we discuss fitness, nutrition, and mindset for dogs. Let's do this. Are you lacking some clarity around dog nutrition, dog fitness, or scent work? You are not alone. Learn how to ignite your dog's physical and mental performance, safe, systematic, and injury-free. Yes, you can improve your dog's physical and mental performance and achieve amazing results following the Dogs and Deadlifts programming. Because this work is not just about you, it's whom you do it with. We understand you want to make sure your coach is the right fit. Get access to certified canine athlete specialist coach and owner of Dogs and Deadlifts, Daniel Rose. And you can figure out how to get the results you're looking for, whether it is your dog's general behavior, athletic performance, or sports scent detection. Book your 30-minute free online discovery call with Daniel today. The link is shown in the notes below.
So welcome back to the Dogs and Deadlifts podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Rose. And today we have another returning guest member, Ashley Skulak from Canine Resistance Training. Hello, Ashley.
Hi, Daniel. How are you?
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, I was just reflecting that we haven't had a good chat, you know, or our first chat was episode 13, and this is going to be hit episode 55. So a heap of has happened both in my life and your life, which we're going to, you know, chat about today.
Yes. No, I'm super stoked to be back. I appreciate you asking me to come back. I think, you know, just before we hit record, we were having just a brief conversation. A ton has happened in life for both of us. So, you know, we can catch everybody up on what, you know, the CRT 2.0 is, what I even do, and kind of just recap and go from there. So I'm excited for this conversation.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I've got a lot of, you know, messages come through as well, you know, can't wait for your chat with Ashley, etc. So before we sort of get into all the juicy stuff, for those that don't know anything about you that have been, you know, been listening to my podcast, but they've only listened to, let's say 4 or 5 episodes, you know, they're like, who is Ashley and what the hell is canine resistance training?
Yeah, I know. It's two really good questions. So hopefully I'll answer them for you. Yeah. Daniel, I don't remember when you and I actually met or connected or how we did. But for those of you who don't know me, and we were just joking about I stay in this small pocket of dogs, right? And it really embodies like canine fitness. That's kind of what my avenue is and what I really enjoy. But for those of you who don't know me, I'm located in the United States, Maine to be exact, this way tiny corner up in the Northeast, and it's freezing cold right now. We're about to hit our winter. And I have been working with dogs. I want to say it's getting close to a decade now, given how old my dogs are. I've got 3 pits of varying ages. My older 2 are 9.5 and 10.5, and my younger one is now 4. So my house is busy all the time, and add a toddler into the mix. It's just chaos from the time that I get home. But I started working with dogs when I adopted my dogs about a decade ago, and it was just casual fun. I dabbled in Mondio ring protection sports. I did my fair share in nose work and agility. I tried all of those things, and lo and behold, my dogs had other plans for me, and they ended up, really, really getting into the sport of canine weight pull. So I was competitive, with my dog Maya for several years, probably about 4 to 5 years. And the only reason I got into that was just because she got this really, really terrible diagnosis by the age of 1. But she was diagnosed with osteoarthritis of both elbows, and they predicted by the age of 5 that she would no longer be able to walk. And so that really was the tipping point and the catalyst for me to dive headfirst into how can I defy fate with this dog and try to give her the longevity and fulfillment of life the best that I could. And it got me involved in canine weight pull. And like I said, I was a novice. I was super green when I started training. And I've learned so much over the years, and I've worked and collaborated with so many wonderful specialists and professionals. And that's sort of where the whole CRT, canine resistance training program, really came from. And we can get into that whenever you tell me and prompt me. But aside from dogs, for those who don't actually know what I do day to day, is I have a background in nursing. So I was a critical care nurse for the better part of a decade. And then I moved, and now I'm an assistant professor and the director of clinical simulation and nursing at the University of New England. So my interests lie very much in just overall health, well-being, and it's sort of translated in both humans and dogs. So I feel like you and I jive really well when we have these chats, because it's just, you understand, you're one of those people that are in my pocket that get sort of the wheelhouse in the world that I come from. So
yeah, for sure. So while you obviously just listening, but that just came to me, I think, and this is where I 100%, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm probably 75% sure. This is you did a lecture for Dr. Erica Bowling in her program. I completed her program, so I think that's when I first heard of you, and then that sort of got me down the web of yourself, obviously Jay, that's going back some years now. Yeah, I think that might have been.
I mean, I've worked with some of the best out there, at least in my opinion. And I'm sure everybody listening, Jay Zach of Next Level Dogs and the whole founder of GRC. I've worked with Dr. Erica Bowling. I've took many seminars from her. She's wonderful. I was actually thinking about revisiting her very shortly.
Yeah.
And I've worked with Cad Mackin and just a slew of dog people. And there's so many more now, but those were kind of the guys that I originally got started with. Yeah. So I've had really good mentorship, but like I said, I've just found myself sort of my niche, and it's helping people sort of get the foundational and the aspirations if they choose to compete in the CRT program is how I use that to help them achieve those. So yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Jumping over, in your, I suppose, your opinion or your words, what is CRT or canine resistance training?
Yep. So it originated, Daniel, it's like there was this crazy idea where I went, wow, as a human in my fitness journey, you follow programs and there's people out there to mentor and to coach you and to help guide you. And when I was starting with my own dog to get started in that, it was easy. It was just like, okay, jump on a Facebook group and somebody who did this before you is going to tell you exactly what to do and how they did it with their dog. And the advice was so terrible. In retrospect, it was like, I can't believe that I actually did what they told me to do. And so it got me really thinking. And I at the time when I originally put this program out, the CRT program is like a structured, multifaceted, it's layered. So it's depending on where you're at in your development, there's a particular program that could meet the needs of your dog. So I won't get into that because we can talk about that when we talk about like what CRT 2.0 is. But it really is, it's a canine fitness program that helps owners and dogs develop the strength. Whether they choose to move into competition is a whole different basket of eggs. But honestly, it's just, I want overall fitness and well-being, because I do think that every dog has the right to have those things, not any of them that just choose to do competitive weight pull. So my goal was to just how to take that facet of training and make it more accessible to everyone, whether they have a background and want to do agility. I know we were just talking about agility dogs, but those are some incredibly athletic dogs, and injuries are looming just with every sport. And it's like, how can we make those things less and make them stronger and more resilient for the chosen activity that they do? And so that really started this CRT program. And it got me thinking about, how do I make this easy? How do I make it safe to integrate for other dogs? Because like I said, the advice I got was just awful. It was like, okay, you have a 50-pound pit bull, so why don't you go and strap her to a 30-pound tire and drag her for a mile? And it's like, okay. So I did it, and it just, burned her out and myself. And it was, we just had a crazy tumultuous start, but she ended up, because she's so amazing, she persevered, and I learned a lot of great lessons on what to do, what not to do. I consulted with a team of her therapists and we've created this program. So, and that's where it got started. That was the original CRT. And now we're at the the rebuilding phase. And
Awesome. And that's so certainly keen to jump into 2.0, but let's you know, before we do, let's just go over what's happened since, you know, let's just say in the last 18 months, 2 years, or, you know, you know, I think that's how long ago, episode say 13, when I last had you on the podcast, you know, some big changes in life, including bringing a little human into the world. Yeah.
I know, it's crazy changes. So I think prior to our first conversation, we hadn't hit the pandemic yet, right?
No.
Yeah. So that's how long it's been, which is crazy. But yeah, so we hit that pandemic, and you know, I was like maybe 2 or 3 months in, and I'm like, holy cow, I'm gonna have a baby. That was how that started. So, you know, it just, life happened. And, you know, Ronan, my son, was born. He's now 20 months old. And he's just a ball of fun, keeps me on my toes. But unfortunately, you know, with everything going on, I had to put family first and kind of refocus my priorities. And so, as hard and as devastating as that decision was, like, I knew in the back of my mind, it was the right decision. And I had a couple inquiries not too long ago, and I won't put their names on the podcast, but they are devout followers, and they wrote me one day and they said, hey, you know, are you ever going to consider coming back? You know, we've got a lot of people that just need your help, and we need a resource, and we need, you know, just a place to send them. And it got me thinking. I went, at first I was a hard no. I was like, you know, I set my boundary, I'm done. And then I got to thinking a little bit more, and I thought, you know what, my whole goal for all of this was truly education, and for it to be a resource for people who want to learn, who were like me. And so I was like, you know what? I think now is a good time. Like you had said, I think the universe sometimes has other plans. So I think the break was much needed, but boy, did I miss it. I missed helping people and coaching them along and watching the excitement that they gather from the first, you know, their first successes. And I missed all of it. So I think I connected with you. I connected with a few other people, and I said, you know what, it's coming back. I'm going to do it.
yeah, for sure. And, you know, for me, super excited, you know, that I know that you've got a number of, you know, coaches that you know, that you've worked with in the past and stuff like that, that are continuing to, you know, try and, you know, hold the flag, you know, but certainly nothing beats, you know, having, you know, yourself there to also to guide those coaches and mentors. Therefore the reach is far greater as well.
No, I'm incredibly lucky that in my absence, you know, I was able to teach and to coach those that I did, and they're scattered and peppered throughout the United States. There's a couple in Australia. And they were holding the ship together, truthfully. But I'm glad to be back and to be there and to support them, because I think that's one of the best things about at least this program. You know, if nobody ever chooses to follow it, the one thing they can count on is always having a good support system in what they're doing. I'm super glad for that.
Yeah, awesome. So, you know, let's jump in. You know, obviously from my point of view, I've completed, you know, the original. You know,
OG.
Yeah, for sure. Let's you know, let's talk about 2.0, and I suppose what you feel the differences are, the platform that you're using and how it sort of makes up. Then we've also got some questions that some of the members in the Facebook group have asked that we talk about or discuss, and then let's just sort of flow from there.
Sure. So the CRT 2.0, nothing has changed about the program. I still truly fully believe that I need to have it in those successions of one another to build a really comprehensive, you know, whether you're looking for a well-rounded athlete type thing, or if you're looking for just, like I said, avenues to branch off into other competitive venues. But I firmly believed that. So I kept the foundational work. I've kept the performance program that introduces a lot of other different styles of training that's more challenging. And then I have like the level 3, which is what I call the shooting for competition. And it is solely submaximal work in aiming for those one rep max competition, you know, avenues. So I've kept that. I've changed the platform just because of the years of experience that I've had with teaching and watching others who also are in the same realm as I am. I'm like, you know what, this education could be better. The delivery could be better, and it could be more congruent to how I really hope that those students learn. And so for me, it was taking what I do on a day-to-day basis in the nursing world in my profession, and merging it with what I do with the CRT program. So that's really where the relaunch was also a complete rehaul of not only just how the content gets delivered. And I know I've bounced ideas off of you and you've helped me collaborate with like, how is this really good? And I've asked some of the other members, I've got their feedback. So they were wonderful about how they want to learn. And the other thing that's different, that's unique actually, is that in the years that I have been helping and coaching, I've noticed so many different themes of things, you know, as far as questions. And I'm like, I really need to address those this go around. I want to, how would I do it? How would I coach them? So a lot of the material that people like asked me about is now addressed, but I've also given program options. Before it was just this one sort of basic, okay, this is a pretty self-explanatory, easy model to follow. But I've also then encountered different scenarios over the years with people that I've worked with. And so now I actually have different options for the program that'll ultimately get you to the same end goals of which I hope for the foundational stuff. So it's like program option A and B. And I allow the learner or the client or the own dog owner, whichever, you know, verbiage you prefer, but I allow them to pick the one that makes most sense for them. And I have certain criteria to help them decide, okay, what actually would be good for me. And so far I've gotten great feedback from that. For those that have actually started, they're like, oh yeah, you know, program option B for me sounds like way more doable and I can get into that instead of A, but both of them will meet what I think are necessary benchmarks and the prerequisites for safety and integration for a dog. So, and they're not crazy. It's not crazy different. It's just a tailored a little bit different. So that's the biggest difference, I think. Again, a lot of questions that I had fielded over the years, and I have videos that address those things. So there's just, it's a little bit more thorough, I think. And I'm super proud of it. It took me quite a bit of time to get it like off the ground again. And I put a lot of like, literally I just dove head first. You didn't see me for like a week and a half. I'm like, I'm getting this back up and relaunched, but it turned out great so far.
Awesome. So I wanted to, you know, obviously touch on, and you know, something that I preach about, and people get, maybe I don't care if people get sick of it, because I don't see enough of it, right? I don't care. You know, something that you know, we spoke about, you know, going back, is, you know, just simple things like warming up, rub downs, you know, terminology, and touching on terminology like progressive overload, time under tension, you know, giving your dog, you know, the opportunity for neuro pathways to develop, you know, you know, ligaments, tendons, like, oh, you know, I'm getting carried away now, you know.
Like, we just turn it into a whole anatomy class. And that's what I tell the people when they're watching the videos, like, I'm really sorry. And I don't want to try to make this that thing, but you need to understand it. So I hear you. Speaking my language, go ahead.
That's exactly right. So, you know, for those out there that are, you know, they might have heard of it, or they're looking to get into it. You know, there's obviously some foundation things that you need, and we'll talk about harnesses shortly, you know, but I suppose the importance of, you know, let's talk about the importance of, firstly, you know, the warm up and rub down and, you know, time at liberty after training sessions, but also, then we'll move into what is time under tension and what, you know, progressive overload.
Yeah. So I want to just talk about, like, because what you, like you mentioned, we will talk about harnesses, because that was actually a question that somebody had. So I think we addressed that separate. But I think, you know, to be honest, this is a scenario where I didn't get this advice when I was starting and I was looking. People didn't tell me you need to properly warm up. You needed to allow your dog to have a cool down or a liberty period. And, you know, the question becomes, it's like, well, why should I have those things? I agree. The warm up can be sort of self-explanatory, because you're really doing this to try and minimize the risk of injury. And if you don't actually warm these dogs up as the workloads get more demanding, you know, that you're asking for a recipe for disaster, in my opinion. You're just making it almost inevitable that we could have an injury. But I think the cool down and the liberty period and the rub down, whatever you want to call it, and honestly, to me, it demonstrates a mutual respect. And I think that's what it boils down to. You know, we can get into specifics of what those are, but I think when you start asking your dog for a lot of these, the, again, the workloads, the physical effort that they're putting in, and at a certain point, the work that they do becomes not fun. It's not just, you know, wagging their tail and running down the trail. It's physically demanding. And you watch a dog's perception of that change before your eyes as these workloads get heavier. And I think by the owner and the handler demonstrating their commitment to a warm up and a cool down or a liberty period or a massage or a rub down, to me, that is demonstrating the mutual respect for your dog. And that's something I wasn't taught. You know, it wasn't until I had wonderful mentors that were like, hey, why don't you put these aspects into what you already do? And they helped me kind of see the light of, yep, I totally get why you do that. You know, I have always been and worked with people who bring their dog out. They do the work, they play tug with them for 5 or 6 seconds. They call it a warm up. They do whatever it is they're doing. And then they shove them right back in the kennel box. And for me, especially with like competitive weight pull, when you're pulling thousands of pounds down a track, I don't know. It's something in my gut that's like, that's really not, it's not good enough. It doesn't show them the love and appreciation and the respect that you have for what they just did for you. And I think, you know, even explaining that, I've never had a student go, that just sounds like a terrible idea. They're like, wow, that's amazing. And they really are dedicated and they take the time to do that. And it, you know, it serves in the long run. Because again, you will start talking about like progressive overload and time under tension and just recognizing the importance of that terminology. Because again, when I got started, and I'm sure when you started too, you have a background in human fitness, to my understanding, right?
Yes, yes.
So that was simple knowledge for you. But like for me, it was like I said, hey, take Maya out and throw her on a tire and go a mile. And you're like, okay. Meanwhile, I had a dog who had degenerative joint disease. And I'm like, yeah, let's do that because that's what you're telling me to do. And I had no idea about the adaptability and understanding, you know, you have to develop the soft ligament because everybody wants their dog to be muscular. That's like the number one thing that I get. People are like, I want to do this program. Well, why do you want to do this program? Because I want my dog to have muscle. That's awesome. Except for that's like the last thing that actually develops. And if they don't have strong ligaments and tissue, I just had a conversation with Jen Wolf. For those of you that are listening, Jen Wolf is a licensed, she's a vet tech. And I forget the acronym that used to describe her, but I think she's a canine rehab specialist, if I'm correct. And she's a wonderful resource. She does the CRT program with her dogs. And we were just having this conversation and she said, it is so important. I think the study she read was 80% of muscular health. So 80% of the muscularity's health is actually soft tissue and ligament. Yeah. So I just found that fascinating. It's like, there it is. That's why. It just resurfaced why we start slower. We build dogs up to certain working aspects instead of just assuming. Mm-hmm. I had a lady years ago who said, no, my Rottie can handle this. You know, she had a Rottweiler like 90 pounds. Mm-hmm. And I said, you really should start with this weight. You know, we don't know how he will react. And sure enough, the second that she did the opposite of what I said for her to do, the dog shut down immediately, physically and mentally. So there, I think it's a twofold when you look at time under tension, right? Which is, mm-hmm. I don't know if you need me to describe these, Daniel, so you can.
Yeah, if you don't mind, just for the listeners out there that aren't familiar with this type of stuff.
Yep. So the two main principles I think that guide a lot of the CRT program and a lot of other things in both human and canine fitness is this time under tension. You'll see it abbreviated TUT or TUT, however you want to pronounce it. And then the progressive overload theory, progressive overload concept, both of them being very, very like kind of the pillars of the foundation of this program. And so progressive overload refers to the progressive or gradual stress that you're placing on a body or a musculoskeletal unit for all intents and purposes and what we're speaking about today. Mm-hmm. But it is the progressive nature of that stressor. And so again, when you're doing that, being very mindful of how you're going about that and to what weight, you know, specifically with we're talking weight pull, you can't just assume that your dog of 50 pounds can handle 35 pounds out of the gate. It's not good, can be very detrimental to the developing structure of a dog, the developing mental resilience of a dog as well. And looking at time under tension is simply that it's how long the muscle itself or the body, if you want to call it that, is placed under duress. And I had a little bit of tiffs with somebody one time and she goes, duress. I don't really think that's the right word. I'm not trying to stress my dog, and I hear you, not what I want to do either, but duress really is like muscles and soft tissue and ligaments cannot get stronger if they don't, in a sense, I'm going to use this word, but if they don't break down. I'm not saying we need to do that at an alarming rate, but that is the nature of the way muscle fibers work. And it's the rebuild process.
For sure. 100%. Yeah. They're designed to rebuild, you know, for sure.
Yep. Taking into those two factors, then, you know, just having that very brief, I gave you guys a very brief anatomy of that, but there's whole theories about it, but it's just having a foundational understanding of those two things really helps you understand, okay, why would I increase my weight this week and maybe not go the extra mile that I was planning on, you know, and not just sort of winging it. And that was what a lot of what I was seeing is just people had no idea why they were doing what they were doing. And they didn't understand these principles and bringing them forward while they were training. So that's where those, you know, you're aware of them, Daniel. And I think anybody who has trained with me is very much aware of them, but they're the driving forces behind why we do what we do.
For sure. Just you mentioned Jen Wolf. Jen Wolf came on the podcast a little while ago as well. So if you're looking to hear a little bit about what Jen does, I can't remember the episode number off the top of my head, but certainly there's a podcast there where Jen and I had a good chat about a number of things as well.
Yeah, she's a fabulous resource, and I forgot you did have her. So any of you who are listening, if you're curious, go back, and she also does the CRT program, and she did a little video for me for the relaunch, and it's actually posted for people to, we talk about warm-up exercises in there that she really loves too. So she's a wonderful resource for anybody inquiring.
Yeah, for sure. And just, you know, pops into my head, you know, and I've been preaching this for a long time though, you know, I believe that, you know, forms of stress are fantastic for learning, right? I said, we're designed to rebuild, providing we're not, they're balanced and they're calculated stress. Would that be more specific, you know, on the note? Yeah.
Yes. No, this, like I said, this lady did not like the fact that I use stress. She did not like that. In truth, that's what it is. And you're absolutely correct. There are, you know, we learn as humans, there's good and bad stressors. I mean, it's as simple as that. And they don't have to be catastrophic and life shattering and earth shattering, but they have to be methodical and knowing why you're doing them when you're doing them. And I think that's I can't use any other word. Stressors are really a good word. Causes the change. It's the catalyst for the change that we're asking, whether it be muscularity, whether we're doing this to build confidence.
For sure. Now, while I was just thinking of it, so, you know, Dogs and Deadlifts was born and created a number of years ago, but I compare, you know, and it's a perfect analogy with, you know, the deadlift for humans is, for me, you know, the CRT or the, you know, the full body, everything you need, you know, item, you know, or program. And that's, you know, marries up so well. And then obviously that's why, you know, you and I align very well. But, you know, if someone wants to come to me and train themselves, you know, I'll introduce them to a deadlift model. You know, we break it down step by step, everything from, you know, hinge patterns, you know, no shoes, you know, like we break everything down small so we can get the, you know, we're not going to jump into, you know, Eddie Hall's type style, deadlifting week one, day one, right?
Exactly. And that's a great comparison for this. It's in the bigger picture, you know, I think there's a lot of resources out there now that exist. And especially if you're looking to jump right into competition, I'm probably not the person for you because I'm going to be that person that breaks it down so minute, detail by detail, to make sure that you are doing it safe, to honestly, to make sure that we're getting a positive receptive light that's displayed to the general public. Because for so long, and this will go right into a couple of the questions that we had, but it's like, you know, that really is, aside from bringing good education, it's, we need to make people aware that this is a very beneficial way to train, not just for sport, but just for the strength overall.
Sure. And that also leads into something that you talk about is, and I use this for a number of my behavioral modification dogs. You know, there's a number of scenarios that we can use the CRT program in, but, you know, biological fulfillment.
Yes. And so that's a really good question. I'm going to put a plug in for this word, you know, and it's like, it's another popular word, and rightfully so. It's, we try to always do things that, you know, I've seen both ends of the spectrum, and I know you have as well. People who do things because they want to really enjoy that activity with their dog. And then there are dogs who would rather like herd sheep, you know, because it's the genetic code for what makes them fulfilled, not just tired, but like in their heart, what really at the end of the day, they go, that was the most gratifying thing I've done. And it just puts them at peace. And so what's often misunderstood, and I think, you know, it's getting much better now than 5 or 6 years ago. But when I started this endeavor, predominantly, it was the bully breeds that excelled and still do to some extent in the strength sport of weight pull. But it, you know, I didn't settle for that. I'm like, I have 3 pitties, yes, but I do see it blanketed for all dogs. And it just like, they get such a misrepresentation of them being aggressive. And it's, I think it's truly misunderstood that by nature, these dogs are conflict driven. So all dogs, and this is where it applies to all dogs, but you have some dogs who just, they would love to chase the mailman down the street or the bicycle with the kid, or they're at the end of their leash barking frantically at the other dog because they just have this conflict driven nature that they can't put anywhere else, because it would be downright irresponsible for us to just let our dogs run loose. And so a lot of times what I see with this program is that these dogs now who traditionally are conflict driven, who have this unresolved piece about them, they have a place to put it. They have a place to go, you know what, I'm going to channel that into this harness with this weight behind me, and I'm going to put it somewhere, and it's very focused. And it's like all of a sudden the floodlight becomes this spotlight, and they know exactly what to do with it. And it is remarkable to see in itself. And it doesn't fix all dogs. There's a lot of things that, you know, from behavior modification, it can help with. Mm-hmm. But that's one of the benefits that I always ask students. It's like, identify the goals. Why, what are you here for? Why are you doing this program? Because I think it's incredibly important to have those going forward, so that we don't get sidetracked by like a bad day or a bad training session. We can always revisit them. Mm-hmm. And these, you know, a lot of times they go, yeah, I just want some place for my dog to put this. I need this focus from them. And it works out beautifully. These dogs become just fulfilled down to their core.
Yeah, for sure. And the competitive side, look, here in Australia, I tell you, like, you know, there's maybe one, you know, my friend Paul in Victoria, you know, they have 3 weight pull events, 3 or 4 a year. You know, I believe my local weight pull event is, you know, 2-3 hours drive away, you know, and they have maybe 1 event or 2 events per year, you know. So the competition side, for me here in Australia, is minimal, right? Minimal. Yeah. It's the everyday owner that has either a potentially a high drive dog that they can't fulfill that dog's needs on a day-to-day basis, you know, that is coming to me for education around this type of programming.
Yep. And I think that's a wonderful point, because like I said, that was really the reason for developing a CRT program. It's like, how do I take that upper echelon training module that people use for some of the most elite dogs? They're genetically bred for that specific activity, but how do I make this accessible to everyone? And that was really the challenge question for me. And that's where the levels of the programming came, because if somebody goes, you know what, I've done a couple years of this training, and now I want to take it to a competition level, then that's awesome. This is where I'm going to put you. But if you are just brand new, then we need to start, like you were saying, with your deadlift programs. It's like, let's start at the basics. Let's learn the very, very basics and see where you go from that. And some, like Jen, she's on the cusp of now getting into the performance stuff. She's got her young female who is excelling in the foundational work, and she's truthfully ready to move into that. So it's this, like I said, it's a nice layered, and it will get you to where you want to go and whatever your goals are.
For sure. No, awesome. And the beauty of, I suppose, let's try and take something positive out of COVID, right? Let's try and take something positive. The beauty is that more people are open now to online learning and education than they were before, right?
So I've seen that in the adult, not adult, but in the collegiate level, universities as well. I mean, there's been a huge paradigm shift in delivery of education. And that was something I took into consideration. I was relaunching this. It's like, what can I take and what that I've learned from living through that pandemic and delivering to a 70, you know, 70 plus student cohort? How do I deliver this? And I've took a lot of those things that I learned, and I'm super excited for this particular program on this delivery system, just to make sure that it's conducive to learning, but absolutely.
Yeah. And one of the questions and community factor, and like we'll break some of things down a little bit later, but let's, I suppose, segue a little bit, and we'll talk about the first thing, what the first question that most people ask, you know, and we're going to move into harnesses right now, right?
Yeah, we'll exactly move in. Where we're going.
How do we know that, right?
Yeah. So for anybody that's new listening to me or to Daniel's podcast, one of the first things, if you choose to ever do any of this training, one of the things that makes it unique is that you really have to have a specialized harness that's custom made for the dog that you're working. And there's various reasons behind that, mainly to do with safety. But the custom harness ensures proper fit. It ensures like an equal or even load distribution for the dog, making sure, because everybody, let's face it, everybody gets nervous when the weights start to get heavier and you've got your beloved pet pulling this weight, you know, and it to ensure the safety and maintain the integrity of the dog. Having a custom made harness for your dog by a reputable maker is the number one thing that you're going to hear me preach all day, every day. The question becomes then is, who are the makers? Who can I find that can give me that harness? And I have to be 100% honest with you. This is actually now, I feel, a bigger dilemma than what it was 5 or 6 years ago, because we have done such a good job bringing this training to more upfront, well-known, right? And now these harness makers who were very like underground, they were just select few and far, but they're being flooded and inundated with, can you make a harness? Can you make a harness? I almost feel like if they weren't doing this full time, they should be now, because they're just getting mass bombarded with requests. And so they're on, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Daniel, but the last time I spoke, I mean, it was about a 6 month turnaround for some of the better harness makers.
Yep.
You know, and who honestly can wait that long? Like, who wants to wait that long? It's crazy. And you and I have been toying with ideas about how can we get around it, to not to say get rid of a custom harness. You still need that, but how can we get people started while they're waiting for this custom made harness? So that's something that we're always trying to think of. But as far as reputable makers, and it depends on where you're located, my recommendations generally don't change, with a few exceptions, over the last couple of years and seeing what some of these harnesses are being put out. The first person that I always and always will recommend is Missy from Brown Dog Designs. However, she is located in the United States. She is one of the oldest harness makers. I think she's been doing it 30 plus years. Her harnesses are on some of the best titled champion weight pull, like sport dogs. So that's where she gets her reputation. And her harnesses, I've got 5 or 6 of them. They are absolutely breathtaking. The quality, her customer service is, you know, it's very good, except for when she's not bombarded. You know, she's busy making them. But her wait time, at least I think now, is 6 to 8 months. If you follow her on Facebook, you're lucky if you'll catch like a flash sale of one that's already pre-made. It won't be custom, so you can certainly look at that option. I really, really loved Jimmy Allen and Bulldog Construction Harnesses. However, I do think he's had some family events, I think, Daniel, where it sort of delayed him a little bit. So I don't really know if he's 100% out of the game yet. But he also was making very good harnesses. I believe there is a gentleman named Adam out of Stomper Harnesses, I think is his first name. I've been seeing good things about him. I personally don't have any of his harnesses. I'm not sure what his current wait time is, but he makes some pretty good harnesses, good quality. And then the other lady that I really, really like is the Working Canine, Missy, I think is her, I forget her last, she's another Missy. And then Connie Powell of Lakeview Harnesses. So those are kind of the ones that have always been there. Again, all of them that I've just mentioned have an extended wait time. I am not super familiar with any of them outside of the United States. Daniel, I don't know if you can speak to anybody that you have directly worked with in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, for sure. So obviously the one, as you mentioned, most of my harnesses I have very, very fortunate to have at least eight of Jimmy Allen's harnesses, so I'm very fortunate enough to have at least eight of his. Here in Australia, we have Windchill, an Australian made item down in Melbourne. Once again, just need to be clear in regards to what you want the harness for in regards to the extra additional length, because as you are aware that most of the harness makers are very traditional weight pull, and for canine resistance training we need some modifications.
Yep. And I want to just, if you're listening and you're like, what modifications is she talking about? Or what is Daniel talking about? Traditional weight pull speaking competition, right? They don't like the harness to be any longer than it really needs to be, because when you clip the dog, when the dog is in the harness and properly fitted, and you take the back of the harness and you clip it to the cart that the dog is pulling, the dog, the point of attachment sits about level with their spine, which means their legs are free and clear to move and push off and generate power without any worry about that back of the end of that harness touching or impeding the movement. When you are beginning and you're starting your training, you don't jump right into carts and heavy competition sleds. So therefore, we usually ask that your harness maker give you a little extra room so that the dog, and this is a perfect example, if you have a German Shepherd, they're very long, they're very leggy. When they take those nice full pushes off with their legs and generating power in that movement, if that spreader bar or the back of the harness actually hits their hocks, over time, the dog will naturally shorten the gait and compensate it. And then you're going to end up with a ton of, compensatory mechanisms that the dogs had to adapt it and to be able to do over time. It could be muscular, ligaments, anything like that. So that could be more damage in the long run. So we recommend having that additional length just for the safety and maintaining the integrity of the movement.
For sure. And I think most, over the last, let's just say 3 to 5 years, most harness makers are, if you say it's for CRT, they're like, okay, cool, right? They understand. But, we've just got to be clear that there are some modifications that need to occur, and you need to explain that when you're ordering your harnesses, because I have seen a number of harnesses just not long enough for CRT type programming. Yeah. The other one, so Australia, we've got Windchill. Then we also look at in Europe, SMT, Anna. I've been sending a number of people her way recently. She's been making some very, very nice products with a wait time. I shouldn't mention this because all of a sudden I go to order a harness next week and there's extended wait period, right? hers is around 6 to 8 weeks at this point in time. She's got production doing on point and doing really well at the moment. But just to reiterate though, you had these, like you mentioned, you sort of, harness makers that were, they're primarily on their own, right? So they're they take the order, they make the harnesses from start to finish on their own, one person show. Yeah. So when someone turns around and says, hey, I need 20 harnesses, they're like, holy shit.
Yeah. And that's honestly what's happening, I think, because again, as we are emerging and bringing to light more of the positive aspects of this training, clubs are being born and they're wanting mass products of these harnesses, 5 or 6 or 7 of them, different varying sizes to accommodate any dog that walks through the door. So, yes, nobody likes to wait. And I mean, 6 months is a long time to wait, but patience is a virtue. Mm-hmm. So it will serve you in the long run as you begin training when you finally get that harness. But just understand, these guys are, when they say truly custom making them, they are custom making them by hand. And it's usually the one person show. So these are coming to you made specifically for the dog that you are asking it be made for. So
sure. And so just on that as well. So, I had a harness maker contact me and say, can you tell me more about, the type of work that they'll be doing, right? So, they're used to making harnesses for the thousands of pound pulls. Yeah. Yes. So she asked me, could it be, you know, adapted. And I'm not saying we're compromising on quality. We're just saying, you know, in certain areas, not as reinforced. Therefore, you know, you know, is that acceptable or not?
Yep. So it's a great question. It's actually a question that I asked Jen Wolf. Because again, as I said, she's a fabulous resource. And I know I told you to also talk to her. So you've had the same conversation. Mm-hmm. The thing that she really reiterated to me was that the harness makers are absolutely correct. It has nothing really to do with the weight. So we could certainly come up with a harness eventually. I'm not saying we have one in mind right now, but we could somehow come up with a prototype that could accommodate what, 20, 30 pounds of body weight, right? That we're going to be using in this training. The problem is that we have to worry then about the off shifting of the weight. If it is like, for example, I know you know what I'm talking about, but like the karting style harnesses where you have the clips that they, you know, you can have straps that clip to the right and left sides or the rib cages of the dog. That would be fine, except for if we got to a certain point, then we're worrying about the weight distribution or that load becoming uneven and swaying from side to side to side to side. And you don't necessarily see that happening as much with a custom made harness. So it's not a weight thing that I'm actually concerned with. It's more about the distribution of that load that we're working with that I think, and that's what Jen had expressed too. She said, that would be my only concern is that. So if we could find a harness that eventually we could just say, yeah, if you're getting started, this would be a great substitute while you wait for that. I just haven't found that one yet that I could 100% be like, I'm sold on that. Like, let's push that one. So I'm always listening and trying to find and put feelers out for that. So I know you are too, just to help people along to get started so they don't have to wait over a year.
Oh, for sure. And that's, you know, it's been, was my number one goal for quite some time. And, you know, I kept on, let's just say, getting a little bit disappointed, you know, so I just put it to the side for the moment. You know, I, you know, I've showed you some of my, you know, some stuff. We've talked a little bit about a few things, you know, but coming up with something that people can get started tomorrow. Certainly, you know, then order a, you know, within a number of weeks to a, you know, a month, hey, I'm kicking some goals. I love this shit, you know, let's, you know, put in an order for a custom made harness, you know. So these are just little hurdles that, you know, 5 years ago, like I said, we could talk about this and you have a harness within a few weeks. But I kind of, you know, harnesses is the question that most people ask. And if you said to me as well, though, you know, same boat, 6 months and you can get started. We're like, dude, I don't know what I'm having for lunch tomorrow, you know.
Yeah.
But we're working on it. Yeah, there's a collective few people working on a solution, and hopefully sooner rather than later, something suitable will pop its head up, and that you're comfortable with, I'm comfortable with, and therefore can move forward.
Yeah, great.
So yeah, harness makers was one of the main questions there. I know that the question popped up, you know, how to help owners overcome their inhibitions, primarily about you know, being out there with a harness, with you know, with chains flacking around, you know, and the public perception, I suppose.
Yep, and it was, and I tried to. This was such a great question, and I know that she's probably not the only one thinking it. And I think, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, you know, having the knowledge for yourself to go, okay, this makes sense, and I understand why I'm doing this, gives you the, I don't want to say power, but it really does give you the confidence and the power to step outside and be able to go, this is why I'm doing it. I know I've had that experience when I first got started. I had an older gentleman who stopped me and he looked at me and he goes, you know, Michael Vick trained his dogs to fight doing that same thing. And I was so new and so green. I was like flabbergasted, dumbfounded. I was like, I cannot believe that I just got accused of fighting my dog. Like, she's a rescue. I love her more than anything. And I know the coaches that have done the CRT program, you know, I've helped them become ammoed with how do I deal with and how do I navigate these potential accusations. And I think, again, we have come leaps and bounds in the last 5 years that I think that is diminishing greatly. But I do still think that there are people that exist that just have a general lack of awareness of what we're even doing, not even to be accusatory. They just simply don't know. And to help people get over that particular hurdle, I think knowledge is power. It's like that old saying. And I think truthfully, it is the whoever they're working with, right? If it's a coach of a club and they're encouraging their clients or their dogs and the owners to get out there and do this, it's one thing to just tell them what to do, but I also think it's your role and responsibility as that club owner, as a CRT pusher or whatever, to make sure that your owners feel equipped to go out and have that conversation. Maybe they don't know how to rehearse all the terminology, but they have to have some level of confidence in knowing why they're doing what they're doing. And I think sometimes people truthfully just ask because they simply don't know. They're completely uneducated about it. You will on occasion have the ones that are a little accusatory and negative. But from my experience, it's been mostly out of curiosity that people ask. And when you are so simple and honest with them, like, yeah, it's, you know, everybody understands that it's just like human strength training. Mm-hmm. I'm doing it with my dog. I think people get it a lot easier. So that's always my go-to response. It's like, hey, no, you know, like I go to the gym and my dog does it too. And this is what we do, you know, every couple of days out of the week. And I've had more great, like, oh, wow, tell me more about that, you know, following those things. So I've been pretty lucky. I check in with a lot of the coaches that I work with and I'm like, hey, what's your, you know, what's been happening? And they're like, no, I don't get that question. And, mm-hmm. you know, and for most of the people who do these sessions anyway, though, they're out in the woods, they're out in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. It's the ones that, you know, might be in more of a park location where there's more people to see, that sort of thing. You know,
sorry, I just something, you know, you're not generally dragging your, you know, well, you could be, I haven't been, but, you know, around Central Park. Yeah.
That's what I mean. Like, I think there's a small fraction of them that may not have access to all of the wonderful wooded trails. But for the most part, the people doing CRT, I'm sure you know Matt, who's up at 3 a.m. I mean, he's out there at 3 a.m. with a headlamp on in the middle of Arizona because the temperature gets too hot during the day. So he's doing the absolute best thing for his dog. But I'm like, you're not going to see anybody out there. You're not going to see anyone that's going to be like, no, why are you doing that? So I think there's just a select few that still run into those hurdles, but for the most part, everybody's out in the woods doing their own thing.
Yeah, for sure. I think also, you know, having a community around you that is so supportive, because, you know, there's public perception, you know, look, there's always going to be one person or two people that, you know, left side, right side, you know, that potentially either don't understand or just don't like the look of it, right? And that's the whole dog training world, let's just say, you know, that not just dog training world, but that's, you know, a lot that goes on within the dog training community. But having a bunch of people that are like-minded and have the sole purpose to educate around this is going to, for me, to help relieve that burden and that, you know, even if they can just vent, right? You know, and I've got, obviously, you know, I've got my own Facebook group, but, you know, I know that you've got your own Facebook group as well, where, you know, we come together as a group and, you know, I believe that together we can make a difference, you know, around the world. You know, but it takes that community go, hey, you know, I just had this today. How, you know, I got no idea what to say, right? You know, hey, if it happens again, maybe look at this, you know, and I've got no problem. You know, here we are talking. I've got no problems with my clients, knowing who you are, you know, and who your Facebook group is and jump in there. You know what I mean? It's not like us versus, oh, don't talk to her. You're my client sort of stuff. You know, there's none of that stuff. We need to come together and, you know, build resistance together.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more. And I think, again, in hindsight, if you look at where we have come, mm-hmm. from our first conversation on episode 13 to where we are now in episode 50 something. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are people around the world that are doing this. And like I said, they fought for me to bring it back. So I'm like, it has to mm-hmm. be that important, you know, but it is, it's this community of people that just, they support one another. And if you have to take a break because your dog is bad, you know, I've had somebody have to put their training on pause because their dog had pancreatitis. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, you know, when she comes back, it's welcomed with open arms. And it's like, she never went away. And I couldn't ask for a better support. And the same thing, like you're accomplishing, and we are accomplishing so much by bringing this type of training to light. Like I said, the negative commentary is truly becoming few and far between. But I really think that's because the education now has become so much better than what it has been. And for me, I've already accomplished my goal, you know, like that, that was it. Yeah. And it's just, it's continuing to keep growing. And that's why we're ending up with the harness dilemma. And, but it's a good problem to have, in my opinion. It really is.
For sure. And, you know, we're not alone because, you know, one of my next guests in the short term is she owns a mobile running business using slap mills, right?
Really?
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, mobile gym/dog running business, and she has three mobile, slap mills, that in a van, and she does home visits, right?
That is awesome.
However,
send me that podcast link because I'm gonna.
Well, I'm super excited and looking forward to that because I think that her and I have. Talked a number of times. We've talked about, once again, programming and just how many benefits there are from the slap mill as well. But the public perception to start with, you know, she faced a bit of an uphill battle, right? However, I guarantee it, 5 years time, it'll be where we, you know, where CRT and is today for sure. I guarantee it. You know, if the, you know, we all know that there's a heap of mobile dog wash businesses around. Yeah, if there's a mobile dog running business or mobile dog gym with slap mills that is a fraction of that, sweet happy days, right?
I know. I wish they had that for humans. Just drive to my work. And park outside, I can run on the treadmill and go back in.
That's awesome. For sure. You know, awesome. And it's around just education, correct marketing, and not engaging in that to and from banter around negativity. Surround yourself with people that are positive, that have common goals, and that will support. We all have up and down days, don't get me wrong, but support you when you do have that down day.
Yep. I couldn't agree more. So I hope that, if you're listening to this and, this was a question that you had or something you were hoping that we would address, if I didn't address it in its entirety, please reach out to me. And I know Daniel said the same thing. And we can follow up with the discussion because that in itself could turn into a whole hour's worth of,
I agree. And look, just to sort of finish off, CRT, whilst we believe it is for, every dog, it may not be for every owner, to simplify it. And we find our, for me, finding our crew, our tribe, whatever you want to call it, right? And if someone says, hey, it's not for me, no worries. Thank you very much. I hope you find something that, that is for you. Yeah.
Right. Yep. No. And there's a ton of resistance training modalities. This just happened to be what it was a better term to call it than drag work, which is, it's true. That's what it is, but it's a layman term, I think, for what we're doing. And this is a little bit more, it gives it a little bit more credibility because we are doing it. But like you said, I might not love CrossFit, but I might like actual powerlifting, the three basic lifts, or I might love HIIT workouts or running, sprinting, whatever your flavor is, there is something out there for you. So it's like, maybe this particular style of resistance training isn't your thing. That's awesome. There's plenty others out there. Yep. But if it is something that you're like, maybe I want to dabble in, reach out, we'll be able to point you in the right direction for sure.
Yeah. So there's just one other thing that, I try to create awareness around, and this is, I'm super passionate about this one, right? it's terminology, canine conditioning. Yeah. So in the past, when I've done a lot of my research, what is a canine athlete? We talk about Zinc, Van Dyke, all these sort of people have, written some books and things, for me, canine conditioning programs are more than, and I don't mean to be disrespectful here, are more than just fit pause, balance, and proprioception.
Yep. 100%. Are you saying that that's what you think they are?
A lot of people, that is a misconception. I believe that a lot of people think that, hey, I'm going to do a dog fitness or a canine conditioning program. Yes. We're going to start with, around the, I use fitball because it's the first one that comes to my mind, right? that's what we're going to do, right?
Well, and they think, you know, I think there is that underlying tone that it's like, yep, if I buy all the balance pods in the Fit Pause Bone, then I have it right over here in my garage. Yep. It's like, I've got all those pieces. And to be honest, I do those on my active recovery days with my dogs. I do 10, 15 minutes of proprioceptive work. It's incredibly important. I will never discredit it, but it itself is not a full, complete fitness canine conditioning program. It's not. And you know that from just the work that you've done with Dr. Erica Bowling. It's like, there are so many different facets of what makes it a holistic approach and looking at the dog from all points of view. So I agree with you there. You know, and for me, it was like, oh yeah, I got to tie in a little bit of the strength and the cardio and proprioceptive and nutrition and hydration and sleep. It's like recovery. It's huge. So there's a lot more that goes into it and we don't have the time to go into it. But no, I agree with you. I definitely, and it's not disrespectful at all. And I think if you truly love working with your dog and aiming to get them in peak physical condition or performance, you already know that too.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, so let's, you know, I suppose, you know, let's wind things up a little bit now. Let's talk, you know, we could talk for hours and hours. However, I try to make the podcast no more than 30 to 40 minutes, but we're well and truly over that, right? canine resistance CRT 2.0, where can we can find it? Where can we get some more information? Where can we jump on board?
Absolutely. So if you are interested in any of that, anything that Daniel and I just talked about, you can certainly visit my website, www.canineresistancetraining.com, all lowercase. And when you get there, there's a bunch of tabs right at the header there at the top of the page, and you can find, it says what we offer. And you can scroll down and click on the online education tab, and it will direct you right to the Teachable platform where you can purchase the online program. As of right now, the only one that I have currently up and being offered is the Foundational Building Blocks program. I'm in the middle of doing the digging deeper, and shortly after that, I'll have the level 3 where all of them will be open. But right now it's just the re-release of the building blocks. So it's open enrollment. You can jump in at any time. But yeah, if you have any questions, you can certainly send me an email and you'll find it on the website as well.
For sure. And socials?
Socials right now. So yep, Canine Resistance Training LLC, Facebook. I think there's a hyperlink for that on the webpage as well on the website. So it'll direct you to that. And then you can follow us at Instagram, Canine Resistance Training.
Awesome. Thank you very much. So guys, if you like what you've heard, you know, first of all, I want to say a big thank you for Ashley for spending the time with me. I appreciate that. And it's a subject that we're both very, very passionate about. And we'd love to see, you know, people reach out to us, get on board and, you know, get some goals kicked off, but just overall, just make your dog, you know, happier, healthier, and increase longevity is super important as well. So, you know, you're not necessarily aiming for that that competition elite status. You know, we're just looking for happier, healthy dogs with that that will live as long as we can you know, possibly make them, you know, or assist them if you like. So, thank you very much.
And thank you for having me. Yes.
Yeah, look, not a problem whatsoever. Guys, if you like what you heard, please feel free to like, share, subscribe, send it all around the place. And I look forward to bringing you the next episodes of Dogs and Deadlifts podcast.
Are you looking for the perfect gift for you or a friend that loves dogs and fitness? Dogs and Deadlifts has you covered with merchandise and giftware, including t-shirts, hoodies, cushion covers, mugs, plus much more. Head over to teespring.com/dogsanddeadlifts. That's teespring.com/dogsanddeadlifts. Or check out the link in the podcast notes.